Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get three-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Connor Rohr. Albert Breer is still in a Nantucket jail. There was an insider knife fight. Adam Schefter, Ian Rappaport, everybody just squabbling over the news, and a couple of switchblades came out, and we just don't know when we're going to get him back. I'm just kidding. He's on vacation. Tyler Dunn is here from Go Long, my good friend, my college roommate, APSE award winning, PFWA award winning super journalist of the independent great football site Go Long. What's up, Tyler? How you doing, buddy?
What is up, Connor Orr? It's always a pleasure to be here with one of my best pals. You instantly bring me back to the DO days, all of that. And I think we need a feature writing knife fight. You know, maybe we should all brawl at some point and just, you know, see what happens.
I know much better than to get into the ring with Tyler Dunn. That's not going to happen. But yeah, we had Tyler here not only because he is one of the preeminent football minds in the world, but because we're here to talk about the 12 teams who can actually win the Super Bowl. And two of those teams on the list Tyler is intimately familiar with, having been a beat writer for the Green Bay Packers, for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and the Buffalo News, covering the Buffalo Bills. I will say this, though, Tyler is all over it because last year I did not have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on this list. In fact, I had the Tampa Bay Buccaneers winning two games, as you all know. Jason Light accosted me over it at the combine. It was really scary. I'm still getting over it. Tyler was the one last year that was all in on the Buccaneers. He's like, pay attention to the Bucs. Nobody is paying attention to the Bucs. And you were the one person on the national scene that was kind of carving out that lane. And I remember talking to one of our other buddies, Matty Halt, and he was saying, Tyler loves the Bucs, man. And you only have him winning two games. What's going on? And I said, I don't know. I don't think this is for real. And all of a sudden, they take off. You saw what nobody else could see, and that's why it's valuable. That's why we need Tyler Dunn on the show today.
Oh, I'm glad that we can drag our buddy Matty Halt a little bit here because, yes, he was on me as well about Jordan Love. I've been kind of gassing Jordan Love here for about 3 years. So when Love was struggling the first couple months of the season, I mean, seriously, if the Packers were losing in a game and Love was struggling, Matt would just start texting me nonstop. I'm like, Matt, get the hell out of here. Go. And then Jordan Love is the best quarterback from mid-November on. And crickets. Absolute crickets. So, hey, you know, I'm not going to be right on everything. I was absolutely wrong on some stuff, but I will stand by the Jordan Love standing. And yeah, Tampa Bay, man, they had a core. They had a nucleus. They had some dudes who beat the hell out of Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs still on that roster. I think that's where it started. And I've always been a big Baker Mayfield guy. I don't know. There's stuff that you just can't quantify at the position that he has, that teammates gravitate toward. I know it sounds corny at times, but it's real, right? Football is, it's 11 guys against 11 guys just smashing into each other 30 True. Plays a game. You can't always calculate that in an equation. And I think Baker Mayfield just is the kind of leader that a team would want to have. And he earned every dime that he got this offseason.
There's no doubt. And it's funny. So I had always been a Baker guy. And when the Browns let him go, and I thought in a really kind of immature way, you know, you kind of try to anonymously torch him on the way out. So it makes bringing in someone like Deshaun Watson look better for some reason, or at least that's the attempt, right? And I had been, you know, really pounding the table for Baker for a long time. And then, you know, I was talking to some people in his orbit after this past season, and I was like, gosh, you know, I'm just so happy for everybody there, you know, and it's just so great to see so much success. And they said, well, It's great to hear you say that, but you also picked the Buccaneers to win two games, and that was an indictment of Baker. And I was like, no, it wasn't an indictment of Baker. I was like, I can love Baker, and I can think that they're going to trade Mike Evans at the deadline and fire Todd Bowles after Thanksgiving. I can think those two things. I can think both of those two things at the same time. But I was warned. And now I'm off. I predicted Baker Mayfield, I think, was going to throw like 30 touchdowns this year. So let's go. We're going to do it, you know?
That was a top five combine moment to see Jason Light in real time approach you. I think, no, like you approached him. You were kind of, Connor Orr, intrepid journalist, always digging, baby. After the press conference, you're talking to a GM, learning a thing or two. And he brought it up, right? I could kind of see that interaction. It was really cool.
He liked it. And you know what? We should all be so lucky to slam dunk in a journalist's face. When you're in the prediction game, you know, life gets tough. So we're, believe it or not, Tyler, we're barreling towards Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans. And every year, I think this is true, there's only about, 10 to 12 teams that I think can legitimately compete for the Super Bowl. I mean, you have the Chiefs up here at the top of the grid, and then there's a couple other teams that, like, okay, if Patrick Mahomes breaks his ankle or Travis Kelce decides to elope with Taylor Swift or something like that, you know, the rest of these teams have a shot. But I don't know about you, but I struggled this year to get to 12 teams. And I do think that there's a couple teams on this list that probably don't necessarily belong. I think this is probably, I don't know about you, but I think the smallest window of potential teams that can actually win a Super Bowl now. Like, there's teams that are going for it, there's teams that are trying, but I don't see a lot of owners really pressing their foot on the pedal, pressing the gas right now.
Great point. You know, I think a lot of teams try to talk themselves into it publicly anyways, right? You've got to fill these 70,000 seat stadiums and sell hope, hype, optimism. But 12 might even be high. Like you said, that when you said a dozen teams that could win the Super Bowl, in my head, I'm thinking that's pretty high, because there's, to me, there, top of my head, I'd say six or seven that can realistically get into January and win three, four games in a row when everything is condensed. Everything's tough. I mean, these defenses are suffocating that time of year. I'm just thinking of Patrick Mahomes kind of becoming a game manager, really, and picking teams apart from the pocket with his mind, being patient. It's just a different type of football, and I'm not sure there are 12 teams that can win that many games in a row. But hey, maybe there is. That's why we're here.
We saw that last year, right? Where I would argue that 49ers team was probably the best team that I've ever seen lose a Super Bowl, right? I mean, you had a all-star offensive line, an all-star defensive line. You had a great secondary. You had the best collection of skill position players in the NFL. And, you know, you could say what you want about Brock Purdy, but he didn't lose them that game. And you would say, going into it, if Brock Purdy plays to par, you know, if he shoots an even, that the 49ers are going to win by two touchdowns. You know what I mean? And I went into that game believing that. And there's just this, it's the one thing that I think people say, why do you like going to the Super Bowl? The one thing that I like about it is you can feel the game shift in person in a way that you cannot on TV. And I remember, like, maybe two or three plays into the third quarter, I looked at everybody and I was like, this game is over. It's done. And yes, it went to overtime, but you could tell there was just something that shifted. And it's like a, I don't know, it's like cosmic or metaphysical or whatever it is. You could just feel it. And you're like, this game is over. I can feel it. I know it. And there's something to that. Mahomes, Kelce, Reed, like that is a very real thing. Winning the Super Bowl is incredibly hard to do.
That's a perfect description, Connor. I mean, I had the same feeling, and I was watching it at home just because these experienced coaches who have been in these moments, they give you an advantage that is, again, hard to quantify. I mean, think about Sean McVay getting schooled by Bill Belichick in Atlanta at that Super Bowl, right? You've got this high flying Rams offense, a historic game against the Chiefs that regular season. You know, it revolutionized football. They get into that moment, Bill Belichick just takes them to the woodshed. I mean, they had the perfect scheme. You know, they kind of took from Vic Fangio, I believe, earlier that season, what the Bears did to the Rams, put that little Belichick twist on it, and they just punk them in the biggest game. And then that's kind of what you've seen with Kyle Shanahan, right? He is one of the best offensive minds of this generation. He might go down as a Don Coryell. And
yeah,
maybe that comparison is starting to look pretty apt here with the 49ers coming up short despite it all, because they get to overtime and they don't even know the rules. I mean, you've got Kyle Juszczyk admitting they didn't know what was going on at that point of the game. So, I mean, Andy Reid and the Chiefs, they did. It's something as small as that that I feel like these old grizzled coaches still have an advantage. And I don't know who that coach is. I don't know what that team could be in 2024, but it's going to be awful hard to count against Andy Reid if they're back in that game.
I feel bad for Kyle because, like, not knowing the intricacies of a rule that, like, you know, there's only like a 10% chance it's going to pop up. That's like right in my wheelhouse. I was talking to my friend about this the other day, and he's like, you know, I have this presentation tomorrow for work and it's at 3 o'clock. And so I got to start at 8 a.m. and I got to put together all my slides and I got to get my talking points. And he's like, aren't you nervous when you do your podcast? And I was like, brother, I wake up about 4 minutes before this thing starts, and then I do a couple shoulder stretches, and then we wing it. But there are times when, you know, it wasn't long ago that I was presenting to a group of people, and everyone really knew their stuff. And I came in there and tried to give it the old or okie doke and just kind of charisma my way through it. And like two or three questions in, I'm like, God, I am in trouble. And it was, you know, these are football people that are just staring holes through me. And I was like, boy, you know, they can sniff out someone who doesn't know what they're talking about. And, you know, I may or may not have known exactly what I was talking about. But I feel for Kyle.
It's a fine line. It's so true, because you want your players to be loose and play off instinct, right? And be themselves and not tight. That's been a problem here in Buffalo. It's a very tight team that time of year. I think you can kind of like over prepare and over analyze. There's definitely something to that, but you've got to know every situation and be prepared for overtime in the Super Bowl. I mean, that's where Andy Reid is such a genius. Like, his teams, they play loose. They're not afraid of the moment. They believe, and they are ready for every conceivable scenario in that moment. But oh my God, Connor, you just brought me back to a journalism class at Syracuse. I think Stephen Dockery, our editor in chief, was in that group for a project. And I remember getting PowerPoint, and he said he had the final duties to kind of like put it together. And granted, we're at the DO till 4 a.m., right? The campus newspaper was priority number 1 through 10. But I wrote on the slide, like, just let me ramble here. And then he forgot to delete that when we presented to the whole class. So I'm standing up there and it says, let me ramble here. And yeah, that's exactly what you're talking about. You can't go in that blind to a project.
Just let me ramble here. I got it. You know, just going to ramble.
Oh man. Yeah. There's definitely a balance. There's a balance between, you know, instinct, freelancing, and preparation.
One last example of this. One of my best friends in the world had to give a presentation in high school about sexually transmitted diseases. And not only did he not research it, but he opined. He had one slide, and the slide said, the best way to fight syphilis is with more syphilis. And so he just argued that, and the teacher was horrified. And I don't think he did well on the presentation, but that's the dangers of rambling.
I mean, that's science, though, really. I mean, that's some ironclad science right there. I don't know how you can refute that.
Iron sharpens iron, you know. Syphilis sharpens syphilis.
Yes, syphilis sharpens syphilis, yeah.
All right, the 12 teams, Tyler, who can actually win the Super Bowl, I want you to give me a thumbs up and a thumbs down. I was at the grocery store last night waiting for this to publish, and I texted my editor, Mitch Goldish. I said, Mitch, the Cowboys are not on this list. Do you think we should just put them on so that I don't have to hear from Richie and Austin and have him tweeting at me at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when he's taking his spittoon break? And, you know, but he said, stay strong, Connor. If you don't believe that the Cowboys are going to win the Super Bowl, then don't put them on the list. And I don't. So that said, we're going to start at the top. This is in no particular order. I just want you to give me a thumbs up and a thumbs down. Some of these teams we can, you know, talk long about, go short on. I mean, obviously the Kansas City Chiefs, Tyler, you know, I don't see any reason to not believe that they're going to be there next year.
I'm with you. How can you bet against Patrick Mahomes at this point? He's Michael Jordan. That's not hyperbole. He's on track to be the greatest player in the sports history. I mean, this past year was the year to catch Kansas City. That right. Offense was anemic at times during the regular season. I mean, think about the gaffes from those receivers, Kadarius Toney against the Bills, a game I'm very familiar with because there might have been a series that came out here at Go Along that week. And Kadarius Toney is offsides on what could have been an iconic moment for those Chiefs. And they lose that game. Marquez Valdes-Scantling had some drops. There were some questionable penalties not called. And it was rough. It was rough. So for them to go on the road, win and win and win and win with that group and that offense and have a full offseason to kind of reload at receiver. Yeah, it starts with the Chiefs, without a doubt.
Now, I have the Bills here, and I'm curious what your thought is. I mean, nobody has written about the Bills in depth like Tyler. Tyler was the one that had that great series on Sean McDermott and kind of tracing everything from – we had a great series on the 13 seconds loss, but then kind of a window from that all the way through where we were towards the middle point of last season and just, you know, really fascinating window into Sean McDermott. I urge you guys to check that out at Go Along. I like the idea of teams cutting loose kind of the guys who get you close but don't get you all the way there. I don't have a problem with getting rid of Gabe Davis, Jordan Poyer, Mitch Morse. Like, maybe Mitch Morse was a kind of a heart and soul guy, and so was Jordan Poyer for sure. But I don't have a problem with regenerating that and almost forcing Josh Allen to develop his own receivers organically. I don't know if it gets them to the Super Bowl this year, but if Buffalo is in the playoffs, I've always thought this, and you just have a giant moose of a quarterback who is in, let's say Josh Allen's healthy for once, right? You know, he is probably that 1C or 1D to Mahomes where he can get hot and just take a game over and things happen that just we don't really have an understanding of here on Earth. And I do think that Josh Allen is one of those players, so I feel like they got to be on the list every year because if they get into the tournament, I mean, dude, Eli Manning backed in like a 9-7 Giants team into the Super Bowl. You mean to tell me that if Josh Allen gets the Bills in it at 10-7, that he's not a Super Bowl threat?
In my mind, immediately goes back to 2021, Connor. I mean, the heater that Josh Allen was on, I know it was only two games, but a perfect game against New England and Bill Belichick in the wild card. A touchdown on every possession in the cold here in Orchard Park. And then it continues on in Arrowhead, where obviously one of the greatest playoff games we'll ever see. It's a shame that that team didn't even get to the conference championship game. I mean, the way Josh Allen was playing, the way Brian Daboll was pushing the buttons, that Buffalo Bills offense was rolling. So I don't think they can get back to that point offensively. I mean, that was a potentially historic run, but Josh Allen is still there. And I do believe that Sean McDermott, one of his biggest faults as head coach, has just been a hesitancy to let his quarterback be himself. Let Josh be Josh. Like this time last year, a big talking point around here was the quarterback needs to be more careful with the ball. The quarterback needs to slide more. The quarterback needs to step out of bounds. And it was just all of this white noise surrounding your best player, one of your best players in franchise history, that was completely unnecessary. Dumbest things I've heard being around a football team that you would and having restrictions around whatever art they're creating. I love using the analogy of a comedian. If Dave Chappelle is worried about offending people, he's not going to be Dave Chappelle. If right. Josh Allen is worried about throwing interceptions or getting hurt, he's not going to be Josh Allen. They had to get the hell out of the way, and it took a while. It took getting to 6-6 and getting to a new coordinator, but they kind of reached that point where at least they would let him run. Now they did run the ball more to their backs as well, and we'll see how the offense evolves. But I think the fact that Sean McDermott was going for it more on fourth and shorts, Sean McDermott was letting Josh Allen be himself, I didn't really have as much of a problem with him going for it on fourth down against the Chiefs at that spot.
I agree.
Mahomes had two long touchdown drives. Kansas City looked unstoppable. This was a coach who has frozen up in those moments. He goes for it. You know, maybe you just keep the ball in Josh Allen's hands next time instead of giving it to DeMar Hamlin on the fake punt. But I think I have some balls in that moment. And Josh Allen, the team is going to orbit around him this year. I think all of these new receivers, however it fits together, they'll absolutely be able to find a way to move the ball, score points, and be productive. And like you just put, contend for Super Bowl.
Man, I will say this, though. If that DeMar Hamlin fake punt gets converted, there's no shot Joe Flacco wins comeback player of the year, right? Like, if DeMar Hamlin converts that fake punt, he is a lock for comeback player of the year. I still can't believe Joe Flacco won that. DeMar Hamlin played after... Anyway, let's not get into that.
Baker Mayfield should have got it, honestly, right? It should have been a Baker award.
I do agree with that, too. The next one, I promise Tyler, is not a loaded question, although it may feel that way. Because Tyler, before all this, before he was right about Sean McDermott, before he was right about the Bills, before he was right about all these other things, he was the first person to really write, hey, Aaron Rodgers is a little wacky. He's a little bit different. And everybody is now, this is pre McAfee. This is pre all the RFK. And I'm not saying RFK is wacky. This is not a political statement, but I do think that we all, think of Aaron Rodgers a little bit differently than we did maybe 10 years ago. But Tyler was the one that was first pointing that out. I have the Jets on this list, Tyler. Aaron Rodgers has just returned from Egypt. He's figuring out what's going on with them pyramids, and I think he's going to get to the bottom of all this at some point. But I think, and I said this a couple times, even if the Jets have Tyrod Taylor at quarterback, if they were to get hot, like, this defense is that good. And my examples are, they beat a really good Eagles team before they collapsed last year with Zach Wilson. They were one awful holding call away from beating the Chiefs last year at home in prime time. I think the only downfall of that team, I mean, it was a torn of injuries, and your backup quarterback was Zach Wilson. Now your backup quarterback's Tyrod Taylor. I think even if Rodgers gets hurt again, or he decides to, you know, go to Antarctica in the middle of the season and figure out what's going on with the Penguins, you know, whatever he decides to do, I think you're probably okay, because that team is, you know, they give me like 2018 Jags vibes in terms of how good that defense could possibly be. But I'm curious, get that whole package there, okay? Aaron Rodgers in the Florham Park Nut House. What do you think's going to happen with this team?
That was one hell of a rundown. If I can add, you know, I'm with you, though. Like, this is a quarterback who, let's not forget that Deshaun Kizer's on that podcast, what, a year or two ago, and said that Aaron Rodgers, and one of the first conversations he had with him, you know, trying to tell him to research 9/11, that insinuating that it was an inside job. If he knew the truth about 9/11, and what do we see? First game with the Jets on 9/11, he's running out there with the flag. I saw that. I'm like, is he the guy that should really be holding the flag, running out onto the field with these beliefs? I don't think so. I really don't. Bizarre. Yeah, he's weird, man. I mean, way back to 2017, 2018, I had people in that building in Green Bay trying to tell me, like, this guy is into some wild conspiracy theories and is a little bizarre. But all of that, we'll put that in it for another podcast, another day. Sticking to the football, he's old, and he's off of a torn Achilles. And the last time we saw him, he was kind of ornery and more immobile by his standards. didn't really want to work with those young receivers in Green Bay. And when it came to functioning within the structure of an offense, which, oh, by the way, Matt LaFleur's offense is pretty damn good. We saw what he did with Jordan Love last year. It's hard for him at this age to just freelance and work on those improvisational plays and outside the pocket. And that's when Aaron Rodgers was at his best, right? When he has thousands of baked in reps with Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Devontae Adams, guys he's practiced with and played with years for years and years and years and years, where they can go up to the line of scrimmage, see the same thing in a defense, and just audible on the fly without signaling one thing, without saying one thing. Does he have that with Garrett Wilson? Maybe to an extent. Garrett Wilson's really damn good, but I don't really trust Nathaniel Hackett and his offense. I don't trust Aaron Rodgers at his age, and I don't trust that Jets offensive line to stay healthy. And it, on paper, it should be a lot better. Tyron Smith, right? To get him at the dollar amount they got him for is a steal, but can they stay healthy? I don't think so. I feel like somebody goes down and Aaron Rodgers at some point is getting outside of the pocket when he should stay in the pocket. And there's really not a coach there to rein him in because it's his offense. And this thing ends like most things end for the New York Jets in disaster.
It is like I wrote this a couple months ago where we're looking at it now and we're being like, yeah, they got Tyron Smith and Aaron Rodgers and Mike Williams. And then, you know, like, let's say it works out, right? It's like, obviously they got a bunch of good players and, you know, it was great and it worked out. If it doesn't work out, we're going to be like, you guys entrusted the most important season in franchise history to two 33-year-old offensive tackles, a wide receiver who can barely finish a season, a 40-year-old quarterback coming off a torn Achilles. I mean, and you're playing on artificial turf. I think, I actually went and I counted this for the column. I think they only have four or five games on natural grass all year. Load management is going to be a disaster for this team. All of that said, if somehow they remain healthy and Rodgers' last season in Green Bay was an aberration, you know, the broken thumb thing was for real. He really couldn't get comfortable and sling it. I don't know. I mean, maybe, right? I mean, God, if there was ever a signal that the world was going to end tomorrow, it would be the Jets in the Super Bowl, wouldn't it? With Aaron Rodgers at quarterback.
I liked your Jaguars comparison too, because the Jets defense last year was spectacular. Yes. I definitely underestimated them. They were elite. The fact that they were in those games with Zach Wilson as quarterback is, I mean, imagine being a defensive player for the Jets and you just know going into the game, your offense is probably going to give you 10 points, 13 points tops. Like you have to be perfect to give your team a chance to win that game. And they were a lot of the time, but you know, I remember that 2017 Jags team, and, you know, they are one Stephon Gilmore horizontal pass breakup to D.D. Westbrook away for maybe getting to the Super Bowl with Blake Bortles, which we would have had the Blake Bortles, Nick Foles Super Bowl. I mean, what we were robbed of as sports fans.
Oh, baby.
What a shame. Oh, but I was all in on the Jags the next season. I think I picked them to win the Super Bowl, and it just blew up in my face. It's hard for an elite defense, I think, to be elite year in and year out. Like the stickiness just isn't there. I wouldn't be surprised at all if this Jets defense did take a big step backward. I don't really have metrics to back it up. You know, personnel justification. It's just hard, I think, game in and game out to do what they did last year again.
You're right. I mean, it is much harder to sustain generational defensive play than offensive play. That's borne out. I mean, that's why we didn't have a Legion of Boom dynasty, no matter what Richard Sherman wants to blame it on. But let's skip over to the Green Bay Packers. I was really inspired by, you know, we always in the NFL, right, we always think that things are on this steady ascent, and Jordan Love could plateau, right? Matt LaFleur could have a bad year, but I thought that the end of last season, to me, the way that they battled back against the 49ers, the way that they absolutely whooped the Dallas Cowboys, I don't know, it leads me to believe, and again, this is another thing you were right about on Jordan Love. He looks spectacular. He looks like one of the best young quarterbacks in the NFL. I you know, the NFC San Francisco's coming off a Super Bowl loss. Detroit seems to be the big kids on the block. But, I mean, who's to say that the Packers couldn't come out here and just wallop everybody, win 11 games this year? I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
I mean, David Bakhtiari gave them all of 55 snaps last year. Aaron Jones is out of the lineup for long stretches with his hamstring issue, right? It was that week one touchdown that he had on that little circle route. He pulls that thing. He's in and out. Christian Watson, the number one in theory going into the season, he's hurt all year. So for Jordan Love to do this with all of that stuff happening around him, and oh, by the way, this defense with all these first round picks, they played well enough to get their coordinator fired. The fact that they were that close to getting to the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl is unbelievable. I mean, really, they had that game against San Francisco, and they gave it away. And it's Jordan Love. He just turned a corner from about mid-November, that Chargers win on. And I'm working on a story, actually, trying to figure out how he went from that first half of the year to the second half of the year. And chatting with somebody, let's just say he's around Jordan Love all of the time, every day. The way he put it is, he screws up once. If you get him once as a coordinator, as a defense, you're not going to get him again. With whatever little quirk you put into your scheme, into that play, like, he can log that and you make that mistake a second time. And I think enough of that kind of happened the first 2 months of the season, where he gets to November and teams are trying to, you know, pull from other teams, pull from other defenses and confuse him. And he wasn't confused. He had answers for all those situations. And a lot of that is Love, and a lot of that is Matt LaFleur. I think he did one hell of a job as the play caller. And wow, how refreshing it must be for Matt LaFleur to call a play and then see that play run at the line of scrimmage as opposed to change. And look, I mean, Aaron Rodgers would change to the right play a lot of the time. There's a lot of good there. But I think any offensive-minded head coach play caller would like to see their offense actually run on the field. So you had that synergy. And now all of these first and second-year receivers, the Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson and Jaden Reeve and Dontavian Wicks, Luke Musgrave, Tucker Kraft, all of these guys now are going into another year with Jordan Love with a younger, I'd say, better running back in Josh Jacobs, with a Marshawn Lloyd right behind him that you drafted. I think Green Bay can get to the Super Bowl, and I would not be surprised one bit if they...
All right, Tyler, let's move on. I mean, you know, I kind of hedged here, so we're not going to talk about all... We don't have to talk about all three of these teams, but I have basically the entire AFC North in here, sans Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, I have the Bengals, I have the Browns, I have the Ravens. Do any of these teams strike you as a possible Super Bowl contender for the coming year?
I know you're with me on this, Connor. Always bullish on those Cincinnati Bengals.
Me too.
Joe Burrow's done it. He went into Arrowhead. They're down by 3 scores. They win that game. I mean, that game alone, and that quarterback will always have me thinking Cincinnati can go the distance. And I mean, they've been evolving since then. This is a much different defense. I mean, they've lost some pieces. I think DJ Reader, that's a pretty big loss. Man, he just eats up linemen at the line of scrimmage. We'll see how they replace him. But as long as you have Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, I don't think you lose much going from Joe Mixon to Zach Moss. They'll be in the mix. Their problem is, I mean, the Ravens kind of have their number, which is weird. It's all about matchups, right? Like, the Steelers have the Ravens number, but the Ravens, with Lamar Jackson healthy, kind of have Cincinnati's number. And then the Browns are the wild card with Jim Schwartz and that defense. But I think that Burrow, if he's healthy, problem. If he's healthy, this is the team that gives Kansas City its best shot.
I agree. And I think, you know, again, the Browns are that team that, okay, if we got vintage MVP Deshaun Watson and a repeat performance of last year's Browns defense, then absolutely you could consider this a Super Bowl team. The problem is, you know, because a lot of this is who can win the Super Bowl, right? Who possesses the ingredients? With Cleveland, and I've said this a million times, you're going to need to get a repeat performance from the offensive line without Bill Callahan. You're going to need to get a repeat performance from the defense, which, just as we talked about before, it's hard to stack really good defensive seasons one on top of the other. You're going to have to get a good season out of Deshaun Watson. And listen, he played a good game against the Titans last year. A lot of people played good games against the Titans last year, you know. And he played one half of really good football against Baltimore when they won that game. And that was the last game that he played last year. My argument there, though, is there was a lot of good run after the catch plays. I mean, there was a lot of short passes that ended up going long in that game, if I remember correctly. So, listen, I have not seen Deshaun Watson completely and wholly take, like, his best games have been, like, 21 for 31 for 145 yards, a touchdown, and a pick, you know? And that's not going to get it done. I mean, he has to evolve to the point, or to regenerate to the point, where he's a top five quarterback again for this to be possible. And he's also coming off offseason surgery. So I think the boomer bust potential in Cleveland is incredibly high. I mean, they could have a season for the ages, or this thing could bottom out in a way, Tyler, that, I mean, if the Deshaun thing comes to a head without a single playoff victory, I think this will be one of the most treacherous postmortems in NFL history. Like, people are going to have to pay for this.
We've seen it where teams, they do so much good around the quarterback, right? Like, they get weapons, they get an offensive line, they build up a defense, and so often it doesn't matter at all if the quarterback can't deliver. I mean, this front office has been doing an unbelievable job. I mean, look at the weapons. Amari Cooper, David Njoku, they trade for Jerry Jeudy. They've got maybe the best top three offensive lines in football. The defense with Jim Schwartz and everything they've done on that side of the ball, you got to give Andrew Berry and that front office a lot of credit. None of it will matter if Deshaun Watson doesn't improve. And I feel like it's first since we've seen him just dancing freely through defenses, doing whatever he wants in Houston. That was a long, long time ago. Can he just snap his fingers and get it back? I don't think so. And you made a great point on Bill Callahan too. I feel like the Browns losing Bill Callahan to Tennessee is a bigger loss than Cincinnati losing Bill Callahan's son, Brian, to Tennessee as the head coach. I think Cincinnati is going to be able to adjust with Dan Pitcher just fine. Dan Pitcher has been at Joe Burrow's side every step of the way. I mean, he's a SUNY Cortland quarterback himself, right? You know, love to the D3 scene here in New York State. But I mean, he has been there. He knows Joe Burrow maybe better than Joe Burrow knows himself in a lot of cases. I feel like that's going to be a really good partnership. And it's really interesting too. Like, Cincinnati's offense with Jake Browning, they adjusted on the fly. And you saw like a lot of, you know, getting him on the move, some easy completions. They scheme things up really, really well. And Joe Burrow has always been at his best when he's kind of the point guard and he's in control and he's able to make all the decisions. I'm really interested to see what that offense looks like. Kind of taking a lot of the good that you got out of your backup quarterback late last season schematically, and now applying it to everything that Joe Burrow loves to do at the line of scrimmage.
This, I mean, I always feel too that this division sort of like knocks itself out because it's so physical and it's crazy because Baltimore was the team that pushed everybody around all year last year. And then you watch Kansas City come in and they were just like, you know what? We're going to push Baltimore around. We're going to play a little bit dirty after the snap. We're going to fall on some guys, and we probably shouldn't be falling on some guys. Travis Kelce's going to be jawing at everybody. And all of a sudden, you have this situation where these teams that are so used to just being the most physical in the room are getting pushed back. And it's tough at the end of the season because you play that style of football for 17 or 18 weeks. Like, you're tired, man. Like, it's tough. And you have a guy like Lamar Jackson where I don't know if he can stay healthy through another season like that, even though I do think they've evolved their offense in the right direction. So the AFC North is always hard, right? Because the teams are always really, really, really good because they have to be. But I do think that there's something to the fact that they kind of just, you know, they wear each other down. I mean, yeah. Pittsburgh's got the entire AFC North schedule at the end of the season next year. It's going to be brutal.
Fantastic point. I mean, that's why I think Hard Knocks is going to follow the whole division during the season. That'll be interesting. And they should. They just beat the hell out of each other. And those rivalries are real. The hatred is real. You can feel it. And then meanwhile, there's the Chiefs in the AFC West, you know, working through all the problems that we got into earlier. And they can, because you're dealing with the Raiders, the Chargers, and the Broncos. Now, I think the Chargers will be better eventually with Jim Harbaugh. The Broncos should be better eventually with Sean Payton, but it'll probably be similar this year where they can kind of coast and figure themselves out. It's so much like, you know, the end of those Spurs teams, Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker and Popovich, and they could kind of tweak things through the regular season, and they knew it was a marathon. Same thing with Golden State when they were at their best. That's the Chiefs. Like, they know that in their division, they'd never come out and say this. They can kind of figure things out through September, through October, and say, all right, let's get our stuff together, get to the playoffs, and win when it matters most. There's absolutely something to that versus those teams.
Okay, we're gonna wind down here. We got a couple of teams. I'm gonna read off a few, but there's one in particular that I'm very curious about Tyler's take on here. I mean, we all know the Detroit Lions. Tyler, you were, again, another team that you were on from the beginning. You and Dan Campbell, kindred spirits. I was up to see him recently. I got to see his new titanium knee. It was very cool. You know, yeah, the Lions are, I mean, this is as complete an NFL team. I don't think there's any argument there. The 49ers are always going to be in the conversation. I have the Houston Texans on this list, Tyler. Do I think that they can actually win a Super Bowl? Probably not. Do I think that if a couple of things ding around and some people get hurt, do I think that they have enough talent to maybe scratch and claw through the playoffs? Possibly. I mean, we saw that Cleveland game last year in the playoffs and how quickly they can get up on an opponent with that defense. The one that I want to ask you about, the other one is the Los Angeles Rams. Well, I have the Los Angeles Rams on this list. Because I do think that they could actually win that division, the NFC West. I think that that offense is going to be really good. I think that defense is full of role players that we're not really talking a lot about. But the big one here, Tyler, the big question, and yeah, I left the Cowboys out, is the Philadelphia Eagles. I think, Tyler, that we're crazy to throw away the idea that this team can't rebuild and reload. They did it in 2018 with Doug Peterson and Nick Foles and Carson Wentz. They did it in 2023 with Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts. I mean, who's to say that this kind of panicked flip to Vic Fangio and Kellen Moore, it sounds crazy on its head, but who's to say that it may actually not turn out to be an incredible decision and they're just back to knocking people out like they were 2 years ago?
I love that take because I know I get it. Like, the end of the season, it just leaves a terrible taste in your mouth with the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't know what the taste would be. Like, even cottage cheese in the fridge for 3 years and then having a bite of that. It was awful. Things got ugly and they got ugly fast, and they got rid of their coordinators. They could have got rid of their head coach. Jalen Hurts wasn't the same quarterback that you saw in the Super Bowl the year prior. I get all that. But man, you mentioned the Dallas Cowboys. Every time I think of the Philadelphia Eagles, I'm comparing them to the Cowboys, and it starts from the top down, the ownership down. Like, with Jeffrey Lurie, down to Howie Roseman, down to Nick Sirianni, we need our best players ahead. Lock them up now. If we're interested in winning Super Bowls, right? If winning games is of utmost importance, that's what you do. You pay Jalen Hurts that $50 million a year contract when you did. You lock up Devontae Smith. You lock up A.J. Brown. You bring in Saquon Barkley with Chase. Say what we want about running backs. If you do have a playmaker, a dynamic threat at that position on a contender, i.e. Christian McCaffrey in San Francisco, it's worth what they paid him.
Yes.
Let alone with the best offensive line coach in today's game, maybe one of the best ever with Jeff Stoutland. So, I mean, We'll see what happens on defense. Obviously, there were issues there. I'm just speaking to the offense and management and how they've kind of prioritized things and loaded up for the future. It contrasts sharply to the Dallas Cowboys, where you've got the richest franchise in all of sports sitting on their hands because they're terrified of dead money. I think it's Stephen Jones, not necessarily Jerry. And it's sad. I mean, they're going to get left in the dust. I'm so glad you left them off your list, Connor. They're not going to win the Super Bowl. They're not going to come close to winning the Super Bowl. The Philadelphia Eagles are the best team in that division. I think they just snap right back into Super Bowl contending form.
The Cowboys thing, and I get that this is an Eagles point, but it just amazes me that you have three generational players. One generational player, two very good players, Micah Parsons, CeeDee Lamb, and Dak Prescott, and they're all at their athletic prime, and your position is just to be like, eh, you know, and I'm not saying you should spend a ton of money in free agency, I'm not saying you should go bananas, but, you know, trade up in the draft, man. Keep Tyron Smith and then get a project tackle. You know what I mean? Move up. Don't just be like, guys, we solved the problem. Ezekiel Elliott's back. 29-year-old Honda Accord Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, this thing is, you know, I don't know. It feels off the rails to me. But with Philly, you know, there's a lot to, you know, Kellen Moore was a good play caller in Dallas. He took the job that I think we all would have taken in LA, but the Chargers thing turned out to be a disaster. Everybody got hurt, you know, and he had to run still a version of that Saints, Joe Lombardi, Justin Herbert offense, right? Now he's in Philly, and same thing with Vic Fangio, where he was a mastermind until Miami. Clearly, he wasn't seeing eye to eye with the folks or the players down there. He comes back to a place where he's close to home. Like, I think a lot of this is just like, you know, people were momentarily down on Vic Fangio. People were momentarily down on Kellen Moore. They snapped them up. I think they're still great coaches. Nothing changes about that. And what happens if everybody, you know, football's weird. You know this, Tyler. It's like, you know, everybody goes out on a great bonding trip and all of a sudden the energy's great and the vibes are good and that carries you through a whole season and everybody loves each other. What if that happens in Philly? Like, this team was in the Super Bowl a year ago and you mean to tell me that they're not good enough to climb back there again? I don't know. I think we're all fading the Eagles a little bit.
I have a hard time betting against Jalen Hurts too. It just seems like he gets it and he's going to look at himself in the mirror and correct what went wrong with his game. I mean, he doesn't strike me as somebody who's going to rationalize and make excuses and say, oh yeah, we had this injury or, you know, this receiver didn't give us what we were looking for. We had this problem. That scheme didn't fit me. Like, he'll be self-accountable. And I think that's one of the reasons I was so gung-ho about Jordan Love, just his mental wiring. Jalen Hurts, everything you hear about him, he's wired the same way. And I feel like the Jalen Hurts we saw against the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, that version is what we're going to see this year.
I agree. That's why I put them on the list and not the Cowboys. But hey, you don't know what's going to happen. Tyler Dunn, thank you so much for doing this, man. Read his book, The Blood and Guts, The Story of the Tight End. Subscribe to Go Long for the best independent journalism in football. And just, you know, check out his Instagram for the best swag. He's wearing Oglethorpe Stormy Petrels gear today. I'm wearing the Kensington Lady Tigers, Kensington High School. Go Tigers. Another gearhead, fellow gearhead. We love the obscure colleges. Tyler, thanks so much for doing this, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Connor. And you got me onto Oglethorpe. I was in Atlanta about 5 years ago, and he said, hey, they got the Stormy Petrels out there. Make sure you work your way to the bookstore, grab a shirt. So that's why I'm wearing this right now. All coincidence, too.
I have the exact same shirt. It's the best. Tyler's the best. Subscribe to his website, buy his book, and thank you guys for listening. We'll be back with our OG lineup next Monday. Gosh, training camp is here. Where did my vacation go? I forgot to take it. Anyway, I'm very excited to be back with you guys, and we'll talk to you soon.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get three-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.